Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Hot Pursuit and Far From the Madding Crowd. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Trash Me.
Yes, do as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, Yazdi, via Skype.
Hello.
If people are wondering why Yazdi doesn't sound his crisp, clear, articulate self today, well, it shouldn't affect your articulation, but you are coming to us over the internet via Skype.
Yes.
It's a time management thing. Rashmi and I are heading out of the country tomorrow on vacation to Madrid. Woohoo! So we couldn't get a chance to get together in person for our usual recording, so we've had to Skype Yazdi in.
Skype is good. Skype makes life good.
It does. It makes it easier.
What did we do without all of this Skype and FaceTime stuff?
We were better people then.
We interacted.
You think we were better then?
I think some things were better.
Not communication.
Correct.
I remember growing up. And
people communicate. Go on.
No, I was going to say, I remember growing up and my mum, when she used to call my grandparents in the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia at the time actually, would save for a whole month to have a 3-minute telephone conversation that was like yelling down the phone. And it was...
of 5 minutes probably.
Literally all of 5 minutes, and it cost her like £80, which is like, you know, $120 or something ridiculous. Gosh. It was all she could afford, but that was what she did, and that's what we had to put up with. So communication was non-existent back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I first came to the US in 1990, the very first call I made was a minute long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, it's all like... How are you? You good? I'm fine. Everything's okay. You're hungry. Nobody's sick. Everybody's fine. Okay, fine. Bye. It's like, you know, it was that. But then, you know, you wrote so much more. I used to write these long, 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 long letters.
Yeah, letter writing has disappeared.
I did enjoy letter writing.
Yes.
And people don't even do emails anymore, which were for a while kind of a nice surrogate for letters.
Yeah, now it's just text with leet.
Now it's, yeah. Are you okay? ?
Well, all good? ? Yes.
but you do get them daily, which is very nice.
That's true. That's true.
We're aging ourselves.
And we get to see you on our table.
Correct.
Yes, we still haven't done our Instagram shot of the Movie Wallahs studio. We should do that just so that people can see what we've done with the space and how we record Movie Wallahs now.
And as an objective outsider, I may say that it's just wonderful. It's great. I love it. It's beautiful.
It's definitely better use of the space. We used to have an old dining table. That's a story for another day.
Yeah. Okay. We weren't going to even go there, were we?
Now now we have a fit-for-purpose conference table from IKEA, which we like a lot.
Good folk at IKEA.
Well, it's good because it's got a hole in the middle where you can run wires, and it's made of melamine, which means it's going to survive a nuclear holocaust. There'll be like this conference table and cockroaches remaining after the nuclear bomb goes off. So,
I'm scared to ask why did they make a hole in the table?
The hole? Oh, it was purpose built to feed wires.
I know, but why would you purposefully make a hole in a table? I mean, it serves a good purpose for you, but I mean, is it supposed to be outside where you can have an umbrella?
No, it's
it's for wires.
Office table.
Okay, it's for an office table.
It's got a little trap door where you can feed your wires, and there are little baskets underneath that you can hang to hide your wires and stuff. So, it's not a dining table, Yazdi, where one might knock one's pepper pot down the hole to never be seen again.
That would be nice if we all on our dining tables had a little hatch into which you could put food you didn't like. Without upsetting your guests. You just throw it down the little hole.
I do like the Lazy Susans, though.
Yes, those are nice.
We digress.
As always.
We digress horribly.
So, I guess we'll have to talk about my Apple Watch, yay, in another podcast. But I finally got it.
The world is right again.
I know, all is good. So we have two movies to talk about today. We have Hot Pursuit and Far From the Madding Crowd. Very, very different films.
Yeah.
But both with strong female leads. So where would you like to start?
Hot Pursuit.
Okie doke.
Okay, so Hot Pursuit, an uptight and by-the-book cop tries to protect the outgoing widow of a drug boss as they race through Texas pursued by crooked cops and murderous gunmen. So this is directed by Anne Fletcher, and it's written by David Feeney and John Quaintance, and it stars Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first? What did you think of this?
I so wanted this movie to be good because there are very few female Hollywood directors right now, and Anne Fletcher is one who keeps getting work, you know, year after year, and she made The Proposal, you know, several years ago, which is my guilty pleasure. I watch it every time it's on television.
Yeah.
And then last year she made Guilt Trip with Seth Rogen, and this year she's back with Hot Pursuit. It stars Reese Witherspoon, who's somewhat on a career rebound with having produced Gone Girl and then starred in and being Oscar nominated for Wild. And then, of course, Sofia Vergara, who I think of all the TV actresses right now has probably, you know, has some of the best comic timing. So I had very high expectations for it. And, you know, unfortunately, the movie came across as a disappointment at every level. It's inherently well-meaning, but it's such a lost opportunity. It's like taking your Mercedes out in the field. You know, don't take it out in the field, take it out on the highway. You know, you have these ace actors, you know, who can do magic, and it just seems to me, it seemed like the movie was just kind of going through the motions for the most part.
Joe.
So I just thought of a very inappropriate analogy, but this is kind of like the opposite of Sofia Vergara's bust line. I mean, this thing was so flat. It failed the laugh test completely for me. It was like, I think I got maybe three or four kind of good giggles out of it, but the rest of it just seemed so clunky. And I think it really was trying to rely on that Sofia Vergara character that we've seen so much in Modern Family, the kind of, you know, the big, bold, you know, slightly clumsy English-speaking Latina. And it was a one-note thing. So we've seen pretty much all of the best gags in any episode of Modern Family based on that kind of character. And I don't know what Reese Witherspoon was doing here either. I mean, I think, maybe I don't necessarily point the blame at her because the material was just so clunky. But it's almost impossible for me to reconcile the fact that this is the same Reese Witherspoon that we saw not so long ago in Wild. I mean, she was kind of cliche white girl country bumpkin here, and none of the depth that I think she's shown as of late in her career renaissance, as you said, Yasti.
So you can't eat gourmet food all the time. That's what I'd say to that.
But it should be a good hot dog.
So for me, this is, you know, yet another entry into the buddy road trip genre. It has nothing new to offer, and it's very predictable from the first frame. But it worked for me, and I think it's enjoyable, even though Vergara is her usual big-bosomed, va-va-voom self. It felt like it was working hard to entertain us, and I felt entertained. I actually had quite a lot of fun.
Interesting.
It's not that I didn't have fun, but I just expect so much more for this group. So I think if this had other actors, then maybe I would have said, oh, it's a pretty unexpectedly funny thing. It kind of goes through the motions, but it's fine. But Reese Witherspoon did the whole Legally Blonde stuff. And, you know, she can do comics. She did Election. It's one of the most biting satirical movies in the last couple of decades. So I know Reese Witherspoon can do that. Sofia Vergara can do it, and she does it here. But maybe it's the script. The script just jumps from point A to point B. Like at some point they decided that you have to make the situation conspire that the two of them have to pretend to be lovers and kiss each other. And then somehow they've kind of cobbled it together to make it happen too early in the movie. I would have liked that kind of stuff as payoffs later on. But it just seemed like it was pieced together. The jokes were all pieced together and plotted around them. I don't know. I mean, it's not a bad movie at all. It's just I had such high expectations.
Yeah, I think you're right, Yazdi. I mean, certainly I looked at my watch at the end and it was very efficient. I mean, they got in, got out. I mean, it feels like it's an easy paycheck. There isn't depth to the story. It certainly doesn't twist and turn as much as something as clever as, say, The Heat with Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock from last year or the year before. It's not as smart as that. But I think that it's a good Friday night decompress.
Yeah, I mean, where it fell for me is that I think this was supposed to come off as kind of a slapstick situational comedy where these two unlikely characters end up in a situation where they practically have to be handcuffed to each other to survive through the whole situation. But everything just seemed so forced. And by that, I mean the situations, the performances, the whole thing just didn't stand well from a believable plausibility kind of situation. And comedies don't have to do that. But honestly, like, I didn't understand the whole twist that happened with Reese Witherspoon's character suddenly being on the run. And it just felt like it was badly put together. I mean, I think you're right, Yesi. It's really a script problem here. As a comedy, I didn't have any real big laughs other than the moments that were all in the trailer. I mean, that was really, you know, all the best jokes, they used up already.
I mean, can we just talk about that for a second? I mean, we complain about this ad nauseum about, you know, don't watch trailers, you know, especially trailers which give away the plot. But really, I cannot think of another movie which is more egregious in terms of the crimes that the trailer commits. Number one, like you said, every single good joke in the movie. And I mean, I can't find two others which are in the movie which were not in the trailer. Every single good joke is already spent in the trailer. And the whole plot is in the trailer. So I don't know why they're doing it. Maybe they just want to get the seats, you know, bums in the seats. But it really does the movie so much of a disservice. Because the three or four times in the movie I should have genuinely laughed, I did not laugh because I'd already seen the trailer and I knew what it was.
Yeah, so I guess I was lucky. I didn't see the trailer. And I guess, again, like we always say, it comes down to expectations. So I actually wasn't expecting much for this movie. So for me, it was a pleasant surprise.
Interesting.
And you know, it really is. I think it's all about what you expect when you walk into the cinema.
I know. I had no expectations either. I mean, this looked to me like not a great movie, which was all the more disappointing when I kind of found myself just, you know, walking out feeling like this is a huge missed opportunity because these two people are wonderful in their own right when they get the notes
and they
right.
They act well. I mean, it's not like they're not acting well in this movie. I think that there just isn't character depth that you're looking for that you would have seen in Wild. I mean, no way is
no,
this
I'm
the same
No, I'm not looking
Reese
for that, though. I mean, I'm not looking for that. But The Heat's a great example of a movie where, you know, I didn't love that movie either, but you can kind of understand that there's something endearing about the characters, the situations. Both actresses in that movie did a really fine job of selling us on what it is the situation was that they were in, and you know, you had some of those big slapstick moments that really, you know, that tickled you, but here they just were.
Yeah, they rely on Sofia Vergara doing a dress.
And I think The Heat is the reason why Reese Witherspoon signed up for this, because both of those movies would look the same on paper, right?
Yeah.
And The Heat is such a good success, even though it's not like the greatest comedy ever made. It's a reasonably successful movie in terms of what it wants to get done. So I think that's the reason they sign up. And again, this director, I mean, every movie now that I'm thinking about it, every movie she's made is about two people who are thrown together who have to somehow get on the road and go somewhere else. And it's getting a little tiresome, and, you know, they need to, I don't know, even Reese Witherspoon's love interest seems so perfunctory in this movie. It just seems like something on the side, it's like a bone tossed to her. And, you know, to give credit where it's due, you know, they're both very committed. Reese Witherspoon is very committed to playing this kind of, you know, diminutive, unconfident cop. And Sofia Vergara, you know, squeezes every little line, you know, with the way she says it, tries to squeeze humor out of it. So they try their best. I just wish this was a better story.
Let's score it, yeah, then, Yassi. That sounds like a summing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie kind of, it has a great premise, but my point is, I really enjoyed the first half hour of the movie, but once the two of them are together, you expect things to kind of go, you know, building and building on top of it, and it just flatlines after that. It just kind of barely comes through. And I think most egregious of all, the movie kind of literally fizzles to an end. I mean, the end credits come on while the two of them are talking and the kind of the sound goes down. So I know it's intentional, but it just literally whimpered to an end. If it was any two other actors, I would have given it a 7 out of 10. But for these two, 5 out of 10.
Joe?
Yeah, 5 out of 10 is where it sits for me as well. I mean, I think there were just too many things that didn't work here. It's hard, makes it really hard for me to kind of tell anyone to go see this one. Even Rashmi, as you say, on the Friday night kind of relax your brain type, unwind from the week type situation. It's just not enough here to really get your mind off work. So, you know, 5 out of 10 for me.
So I probably liked it a little bit more than you. I thought it was a fun movie that I think most people will enjoy, definitely on a Friday night. I don't think it's quite a family movie, but definitely one that you can go out with your friends and enjoy after a few beers. I would say 6 out of 10. So not too far off in score, but I think I definitely had more of a fun time watching it.
It's been absolutely slaughtered in the press. Just looking at the Rotten Tomatoes right now, it's 6%.
It's in the single digits. Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculously low. I just wonder how the tomatometer works these days.
Well, I think the other problem is the movie was hyped to death. I mean, you know, they were on every single magazine. This month, they are either Reese Witherspoon or Sofia Vergara are on every single magazine cover. They, like, you know, publicize the life out of it.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon's doing Saturday Night Live, or just did Saturday Night Live yesterday, right. I think. So
it's really in the public consciousness, and then go and see it and maybe they're disappointed. I mean, I compare it to something like 21 Jump Street, which is kind of the same thing, right? But that, I mean, I was giggling and laughing, and although it's completely artificial, you know it's an artifice, you know those two are put together for the purpose of the script, you enjoy it and you kind of laugh along with it, mm-hmm. but not so much in this one. Okay.
Moving on to movie number 2 then, Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, director Thomas Vinterberg was nominated for the Best Foreign Film Oscar for a movie called The Hunt. Which, if people haven't seen, it's on it's on Netflix. It's streaming live, and
good movie.
It's an excellent movie, probably one of the few movies made on a very difficult topic, and does just handled so beautifully. It's a dark, unpleasant, but still ultimately very, very provocative film. And this director now has been recruited to make his first English language film, which is the adaptation of the 1870s book from Tom Hardy called Far From the Madding Crowd.
Or the Maddening Crowd, as I wrote in our calendars.
Yes. So Far From the Madding Crowd is the story of Bathsheba Everdeen, who in Victorian England is trying to make her own through a series of circumstances that could be almost called Dickensian in terms of the rise and fall of her own riches and inheritances and so forth. And on the horizon for her are three individuals who appear in and out of her life at different time points. A farmsman called Gabriel, a neighboring a rich man by the name of William Boldwood, and then a reckless sergeant by the name of Frank Troy. And essentially, Bathsheba has to decide where she finds her place as a woman in dealing with these men and society at that time. The movie stars Carey Mulligan in the main role, and then Matthias Schoenaerts, Michael Sheen, as well as Tom Sturridge round off the cast as her three young suitors. This movie just got released this week. We just saw it a couple of days ago. I'm really curious to know what you guys thought of it, considering it is a period piece, and you know we've been seeing quite a few of those recently.
Yeah, so this couldn't be any more different than The Hot Pursuit, which we just discussed, other than these men are hotly pursuing Bathsheba. Okay, so this movie should be called You Should Have Just Said Yes, You Silly Girl, but then there wouldn't be a movie. This is a beautiful, slow-burning, solid movie that creates more of a feeling versus a lasting impression of a great epic movie for me. I think this will do really well critically, but I'm not sure it will get a ton of public love. And unlike something like The King's Speech, which I think did really well through word of mouth, I don't know if this will get the same love, but I really liked and admired this movie.
Sure.
Yeah, I liked it very much as well. I mean, you know, we studied Thomas Hardy at school, and we didn't cover Far From the Madding Crowd, which is probably among his more famous novels. But I remember he like you say, Dickensian is very apt, Yasti, as a description, simply because this is one of those sweeping stories that goes from here to here to here to here to here to here. In a way that kind of, you know, modern fiction doesn't do. I mean, you know, one or two of these plot points would have been enough for your typical 2-hour movie. Here we have a very long set of, and I think, you know, the timing of everything, I think, was the only thing that came across a little muddled to me. But fine performances by everyone in this. I think this was very competently directed. It didn't have the emotional highs and lows that I was expecting. I think there were some moments in the movie, particularly towards the end, that I think could have had more of a punch. Instead, I just kind of sat there and observed them. But a very competent film, and I think anyone with any kind of interest in this kind of era of literature should go see this.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I think, I hadn't read Far From the Madding Crowd growing up, and you know, I understand that there's been a previous movie made in the late 60s which had Julie Christie and Terence Stamp in it, which is considered a classic and the most oftenly referenced adaptation of Far From the Madding Crowd. But I can see now, after having watched the movie, why this novel has endured now more than 250 some years. This Bathsheba Everdeen, which is, talk about it, incredible name, but Bathsheba Everdeen, I think, is one of the great literary heroines. I mean, you compare her with, you know, the heroines in War and Peace or the heroine from Sense and Sensibility. And these are all women of that particular time who helped define what it means to kind of hold your ground. Mm-hmm. And again, considering that this is the 1870s, I found her character, or maybe it's the way Carey Mulligan plays it, or maybe it's the way this director has chose to represent this central character, but she's very prickly. She's very, she's almost afraid of somebody getting very close to her. She's fiercely independent. She's trying to make a place for herself while acknowledging fully that it's impossible for a woman to do that in those Victorian times. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of her struggles are very contemporary in many ways, I found. Like, it's, and it's, you know, this is an epic movie, right? It goes through a huge period of time in this person's life, and, you know, it gets a little plotty towards the end. But I think the way it's been crafted, it's a little bit of genius, because those three men kind of represent kindness, stability, and lust. I think, to me, that was my read on it, is, you know, there's the one person who truly and kindly is a good person and who loves her. There's another person who maybe doesn't love her with that much intensity, but can offer her a lifetime of stability and, you know, easy comfort to the rest of her life. And then there is this person who is completely inappropriate for her, but to whom she's, you know, impossibly drawn. So I think it's nice how those plot devices are kind of placed as different suitors for her. Mm-hmm. And by the way, while I was watching this movie, you know, her last name is Everdeen, which, mind you, is the last name of of the lead character from The Hunger Games. And I was thinking, oh my God, did Suzanne Collins base the character based on that?
I had the same thought, Yasti.
And when you think about it, you know, the Gabriel character in the movie sounds very similar to Gale, again, from The Hunger Games. And I went back and have been reading a few reviews. And yes, indeed, Suzanne Collins was inspired to, you know, to base the character of Katniss Everdeen from Bathsheba Everdeen in Far From the Madding Crowd. Not as much in the, you know, fight to the death scene, but certainly in terms of the romantic possibilities that are available. So that's what I mean by, this was a book which is written 200 years ago, but it's inspiring somebody in this millennium to base a character on her. So that's why, I mean, this is very contemporary. Mm-hmm. I love this movie. I really, really loved it.
Yeah, I love how you've articulated the story, Yazdi. I mean, certainly those, now you say them, those themes come absolutely to mind. And I think you've probably done our listeners a favor if they're listening to the show before they go and watch the movie. I mean, for me, the problem I had was it was all too subtle. And everything was extremely well acted, but I would say it was rather underacted. And it had less dialogue, but everything was in a facial gesture or a look or the way someone was standing or articulated. And it felt like a lot of emotion was passing without any emotion actually being displayed on the screen. So I think that's the inherent problem I had. I couldn't really hang on to anything. But the fact that it slowly unravels and, you know, I like historical literature. It was okay for me, but I think that it's going to be difficult for some people to watch.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we're so used to, and I think my comment, I think at the beginning where I kind of said, you know, it lacks the emotional highs and lows. I think we are used to kind of more melodrama around these types of things. You know, those kind of big sweeping, you know, crying on the floor type moments.
Your romantic and, gesture.
Or love that's uncontrollable. And yeah, she is a very controlled character. I mean, I think I can see why she is inspiration for Katniss in Hunger Games, simply because, you know, the girl powerness of somebody who wants to be that fiercely independent in a time when that kind of thing is really, you know, not really condoned by society, I think was nicely done. I mean, I think, yes, the point you made just about the representations of the three different suitors in this movie are very, very spot on. I mean, I think therein lies really the true tale. And I think if you think back to the time at which this was written, I think in many ways one could argue that this may have been some kind of an educational script for young girls, you know, to be
like public service.
Right. No, but to, you know, beware of the lustful, you know, eye that you might have on the, you know, the hot young guy and, you know, also seek somebody that's perhaps, you know, right for you, as opposed to, I don't know. It's striking to me that it's an 18th century text that has these particular morals buried within three different romantic interests.
Yeah, and I did find myself thinking, which one would I go for?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, and I couldn't decide.
Which one?
I think that's the majority of the movie. I think it gets really plotty. Like, the last 10 minutes of the movie just seems like from some other story, even. It just becomes like a soap opera at the last 10 minutes in terms of, you know, it's been such a quiet, watchful movie up until that point, and suddenly all these major events happen, people die, all this stuff happens. But setting that aside, I think this is deliberate. So I think this particular director has very deliberately made a movie which is more about images than words, and this was in my notes, that the dialogue has almost been nubbed down to a bone. It's all in implied. And I actually, I know it's very unconventional and it may turn some people off, but I actually liked it, because while I was watching the movie, I was thinking, why is it that some movies are able to convey romantic love so much better than others? And it's not that some are necessarily better written than others. It's what the actors do. And it's all about the faces and it's all about the glances. And I think the glances between, you know, Matthias Schoenaerts and Carey Mulligan in this movie is like a masterclass on how to convey intimacy of thought between two people who are clearly right for each other, but, you know, their surroundings and their society won't let them be. I mean, there's a huge class difference between the two of them. But even as I'm saying this, it sounds horribly corny, but they're able to convey that almost from the first scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. And there is a tremendous scene like halfway through the movie where, you know, the character of Gabriel finally, through a series of circumstances, she's able to get on a horse with Gabriel. And she's sitting behind him. It's the first time that they've actually had any physical contact. And the horse is galloping. And I don't know, it's the way it's been filmed, the rhythm of it. And she finally just kind of gives up and kind of abandons herself to rest herself on the back of this man. It was one of the most romantic gestures I've seen in a long time. It kind of it didn't make me giddy, but it made me kind of happy that somebody's able to convey this feeling of unspoken things between two people on the screen. But I'm a hopeless romantic.
That I was really- just gonna say that there it is. There's the romantic. I thought it was rather fruity and kind of like very sensual when they were riding on that horse together, because this is a very prudish movie in a sense. You know, there's no skin, there's no sexy time. It's all very decent and moral, and that just that one scene was amazing to watch, I think. The one issue I did have, though, is that Carey Mulligan, and she's a fine actress, so I don't want to take anything away from her, I didn't buy the fact that she was this amazing woman who three men would just fall at her feet for. So that didn't quite work for me. And then I wanted to ask you both, there's a scene towards the end when Bathsheba Everdeen asks Farmer Oak, and they're in this embrace, they're dancing.
Spoilers?
No, it's okay. Not a spoiler.
Okay, just...
And she says, "What should I do?" And I was thinking to myself, what would each of you have said to her? At that point in time, she's at a crossroads, and we won't say what actually happens, but what would you two have said to her? So, Joe, you go first.
I'm trying to recall the moment, so let Yazdi go first.
I wouldn't know what to tell her. I would have said what Farmer Oak tells him, which is that do the right thing is what he tells her.
Yeah.
I think it depends on whether it's like Sex in the City. Are you a Charlotte or are you a Samantha or are you a, who was the other one?
Anyway, Miranda,
you know, it's the same thing. It's like, depending on who she would be dancing with at that point, I think each one of them would have given her a different answer. Like if she was dancing with her neighbor, he would have said, marry me. If she would have been dancing with the soldier, he would have just said, run away with me. But the fact that she was dancing with this farmer guy who inherently means well for her, he's not going to make the decision for her. And he just tells her, you do what you think is the right thing. And that scene, by the way, is amazing.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
It was brilliant because the way it's written, again, you forget that this is a story set 200 years ago.
Yeah. Joe, what would you have said?
I just recalled where in the movie that actually occurred. Yeah, I mean, I think I would have gone with the answer he said. I mean, you know.
I knew you both would have done that. That's why I asked the question.
Do what feels right in your heart. I mean,
you know what I would have said? I would have slapped her and I would have said, you're absolutely stupid. What do you think you should do? You should be with me.
No, but he's a farmhand and she owns the goddamn farm. This is not Mills and Boone. Come on.
All right. Anything else on this one?
I mean, can I just talk about performances throughout? Because unlike you, Rashmi, I was completely sold on Carey Mulligan's portrayal of this character. I think she brought a really nice inner strength to the role that was needed. But she can also be, you know, the word that springs to mind is floral. No, she can be...
feminine.
Very feminine as the character, as the plot also, you know, called for upon times. And she had the youth to kind of make the mistakes that character also made. So, I mean, from start to finish, really, I kind of bought her. I've always liked Carey Mulligan. I haven't really seen anything that that she's done that I haven't liked. I mean, you know, Never Let Me Go, An Education. She's just been a standout for me from start to finish. But the other performances here that I don't think, you know, will get a lot of credit, but I really loved Michael Sheen's mm-hmm. portrayal of that farmer in particular. You know, there are a couple of moments where he's unable to express himself verbally, but you can see and feel his pain just by, you know, I think there's some nifty editing here. I think we should give editors credit. But I also think as an actor, he really brought a genuine emotion to that moment. And just as I think about it now, it kind of makes me feel quite emotional about what he had to go through.
And, you know, I think that's the most difficult role in the movie, but he, you know, he represents a man who is very rational. He's very mature. He's in, you know, he's on the other side of being middle-aged. And yet he's completely overtaken by his feelings by virtue of a misunderstanding almost. You know, she sends him this Valentine's card, you know, as a joke. And it completely topples his perfect, stodgy, well-organized world. And he suddenly becomes a bumbling idiot. And I love that. I have nothing more to say about Carey Mulligan. I cannot wait for her to get her first Oscar. She is amazing. I mean, I haven't seen her in a movie where she has been anything less than convincing, from Shame to An Education to, you know, even The Great Gatsby. I thought she made a, she made a very credible Daisy. But for me, the great revelation in this movie is the guy who played Farmer Oak, who is Matthias Schoenaerts. And, you know, he was in Rust and Bone. He was in a great movie called Bullhead. And then last year he was in The Drop. He's such a good actor.
He was great, I mean, in that.
He is a man of very few words, and he kind of builds, you know, it, one of the hardest things to do is to demonstrate nobility, and his character just from the very first scene conveys that so easily. You know, he's noble and he's kind, and his love for her, regardless of how the movie plays out or how the story plays out, his love for her is unquestioning and complete. And it's so difficult to convey that without coming off cheesy or stupid, and, you know, all kudos to all the actors.
Yeah, there's nothing cheesy or hammy about this movie at all. Yeah. No cheese and no ham. So, okay, let's wind this one up. So, Joe, you go first.
A fine movie. I think I keep using the word fine for this one. I don't know why. It was very competently made and very engaging all the way through. I think it could have done with a few more peaks and troughs emotionally. I think amplitude-wise, it was... Not as heavy as something like Jane Eyre, for example, like we saw recently with Mia Wasikowska.
Right.
You know, that was the kind of movie that really did, you know, make me take some very deep breaths at times. And this movie didn't have that effect in the moment. But, you know, as I've come away and as we've discussed it, it's actually, you know, crept up a little. I came into this review thinking it would be a 7 out of 10. But as I, you know, appreciate some of the moments and recall some of the things, I'm going to give it an 8.
Yes, D.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 as well. And even 8 to me seems a little bit stingy, because I think if I were asked to do a, you know, an adaptation of a film which is, of a story which is 200 years old and which already has a very well-regarded adaptation, which is considered a classic, you know, there's 100 ways you could go wrong. I love how the movie presents Bathsheba as a very complicated person, somebody who is very independent and yet is kind of, you know, feeling out her place in the world and her romantic entanglements, and for being a straight upfront adaptation of a movie, it is never for once, not for 1 minute, boring or stodging. I was with the movie the entire time with these actors, and I think the greatest genius of the movie to me actually is that at the end of the movie, for me at least, this was not the story about Bathsheba, but it became a story about Farmer Gabriel Oak. I mean, he came across as with so much strength. He formed the backbone of the story for me. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I just love this movie. It's 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 8.
So just for the fact that I hated the scene with the sheep, which we didn't talk about, that was horrible. I think overall this movie will provide a few hours of peace and solace if you're looking to get away from the madness. I don't think it was as impactful on me as it's been on both of you. I think this sits with a solid 7 out of 10.
A lot of sheep did die, so be warned. If you're a lover of sheep in this movie...
As we are, because your mother has sheep, Joe.
She does have
No, I'm sure they didn't die.
Well, I think no sheep were harmed in the making of this movie, but
yes,
certainly from a plot perspective. This is like Sheepicide.
Yes, this was like Lemmings, the sheep version.
It was really awful at times.
But how amazing was that scene where they have to shear the sheep, and there's this assembly line of people who push the sheep across and they dunk them in water, and I don't know, there was something so old-worldly and delightful about it. I don't know.
It was lovely, yeah.
Yeah, it was very lovely. I'm like Joe, I wish there had been maybe a few more emotional highs and lows to help us appreciate the story a little bit more.
Yeah.
And again, I think, you know, none of us here have read the source book.
No.
So this is another one of those movies that really does inspire me to kind of, you know, dig out the classics. You can probably get them free on Amazon.
Yeah.
As a kind of a royalty free, copyright free book. So that might be something to do, because it's a beautiful story.
And with a long plane journey coming up.
I'm not sure I'll get through it. That would need to be a very long plane journey. But it is. Epic is the right word you used earlier there, Yasti.
Okay.
All right. Mail at movieworlders.com, twitter.com/movieworlders, facebook.com/movieworlders as well. Instagram is also we have an account. We will be posting pictures of our studio
at some point
in the not too distant future. But do subscribe to @MovieWallows on Instagram if you are an Instagram user, and we'll pop up from time to time and surprise you. So until our next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time. Viva España from me.
And me as well.
And I'm saying goodbye to all of you as well.
You threw us off.
I know. Well, wait, we're going to Spain. Sorry, Esther, you're not joining us. But you've been to Madrid, right?
I've been to Madrid twice.
We've spoken about it, and you're part of our inspiration for going. So we're looking forward to it.